I think most people need things to be perfect to launch, women especially. And I think, you know, my mantra is iteration is perfection, right? Iteration meaning just make it incrementally better, right? So 10% better, 10% better, 10% better. And I think we get paralyzed by the fear of launching or the fear of starting. So most people leave things on paper forever until things are perfect. What is holding you back in terms of what you are not good at? And then to go out and seek support and not be afraid to share your idea. Like the number of young first-time entrepreneurs who tell me like, I can't tell you my idea, but it's long. And I'm like, no one is going to steal your idea. So just share it with the world. And you never know. Someone's going to be like, oh, I'm good at this. And I'm good at that. And I'm good at this. And people begin to help you because you courageously put it out there. And I think that's, so no one's going to steal your idea. There's a million ideas in the world. Ideas are cheap. So, you know, an idea is only as good as execution.
This is Fabian Seewald, your host of the CRH podcast. And today let's go into the execution mode. With Radha Agrawal, we're exploring the power of entrepreneurship and how she solves through dance and community building large social problems and stays in a state of joy. Welcome to the Sea Art Podcast. We build a bridge between arts and business and want to inspire you to see art. Today we're talking to a real super spreader of happiness and energy. It's Radha Agrawal. And we first met back in 2015 at my first Daybreak in San Francisco. And at that time, this movement was still at the very beginning. And then I had the big chance to reconnect in 2018. In Los Angeles. And from there, our friendship evolved. And in a way, the pandemic allowed us to provide a space to digitally continue this collaboration. So I'm very happy to welcome Radha Agrawal with us. Radha is a community architect and the chief joy officer at Daybreaker. She's founded several companies and started this morning dance movement called Daybreaker that helps people rise with the right dose of joy. And we want to learn how she builds and bonds communities, and as well the book she's written, Belong, in which she shares a lot of content that are especially interesting in these days. And last but not least, how is she managing to stay on top of the game with Daybreaker during the pandemic and as well being a loving mom? So warm welcome from Stuttgart to Brooklyn, and thanks, Radha, for taking the time.
Thank you for having me, Fabian. It's so good to be here.
Well, to start off into this conversation, well, who are you and what is your mission on planet Earth?
Wow, I'm a human. Sometimes I wonder if I'm an alien, but my name is Radha, and thank you for the beautiful introduction. I would say that I am a curious social entrepreneur, and I really, my ultimate mission in life is to solve important social problems and do it in a way that are fun and creative and art forward. And so I think big topics like isolation, loneliness, big topics like community building, big topics like dance, it requires just some real kind of focus on experience design. So I think at the end of the day, I would say that I'm an experience designer by trade and a community architect by sort of interest and passion.
Well, that's wonderful. And on your journey through life, what were special inflection points when you realized community and like this feeling of togetherness and connectedness is so at the core? Where there's some time when you really felt this connection in order to say, okay, this has to change, and like what gives you this energy to bond people together in the unique way that you're doing it?
Yeah, well, so first, I think in my own life, I think all of us listening right now probably has moments in your life where you look yourself in the mirror and you say, do I belong? Where are my people? How can I really feel that sense of, I'm home? Right. And I think we feel that in our mother's womb, right? When we're in there, we're perfectly connected to somebody, we're perfectly in this union. And the moment we leave her womb, you're sort of like in this bright light, this crazy room, and we're all of a sudden we're wondering like what just happened, you know? And I think our whole lives, we're sort of rediscovering what belonging really means. And we go through so many different inflections in our lives, like so many points in our lives when we move to a new city, we go to school, we fall in love, we have children, we move again, we, you know, retire. There's moments in our lives where we don't know who we are, who our people are, where we belong. And especially right now in this pandemic, I think it's so front and center. You know, when I wrote my book, you know, we, one in four humans had zero friends to confide in. And that number had tripled in 30 years. And now, you know, with COVID, it's one in two humans are well, actually every single person is socially isolated. And, but one in two humans are really facing deep, deep isolation loneliness. And this is a global pandemic, that's going to far outlive, COVID. And so, to really focus all of our attention on community building, on belonging, and doing it in a way that's not like, like painful and like, you know, like therapy vibes, you know, that really feels like therapy through the lens of fun and dance and movement and play and joy and colors and lights and costumes and all of that. I think that's really, you know, how you return to our childlike state of wonder, how you return to sort of the authentic version of ourselves before we became adult, you know, quote unquote. And I think that's really, for me, the most important thing to focus on in life right now.
Yeah, I can totally agree that this, the sense of curiosity that we as parents like experience with our kids, how can we also integrate this into our daily life, into daily rituals, but also share it further. And in a certain way, you wrote Belong in 2017, 2018. And in a way, for me, I've been reading it as well through the pandemic. And it's really like, in a way as well, a blueprint how to get through it. And you're sharing the concept of going in to go out. Can you explore this a bit more? Because as you said, everybody's currently in the state of social isolation. Why do we have to go in? Or why is it actually maybe a chance that we should face with gratitude to go in? Because it's for the first time the time that we have the time. So please share a bit of going in to go out.
So thank you for highlighting that. So going in, so my whole mantra in life is you have to go in to go out. And I think so often when people try to make friends or build community, they're just sort of already in the phase of where are my people? And they're just grasping, right? Versus taking the time, and COVID has been such an incredible time to just excavate and take the time that we all have needed to just sit down, soften our bellies, and just take a moment to like, just breathe into our bellies, the softness of our bellies, right? So if everyone do that with me right now, just a beautiful inhale and just feel, you know, hand on your belly and just soften your belly. And when you just return to that softness, you're not tensing all the time, right? What does your belly want, and where does it feel most just connected and belonging? And so that's really what going in is about, is just softening your belly and really doing this gentle self-awareness exploration. So going in and asking yourself, what are the qualities I'm looking for in a friend? What are the qualities I don't want in a friend? How do I need to show up in order to attract the friends that I want? What do I value? What are my personal core values today? What am I interested in this moment and for the next few years? What am I really good at? What can I actually bring? What are my abilities, right? So there's so, you know, what am I really calling in right now in terms of my intentions in my life? And, you know, I have about 20 exercises in my book, but it's like, just, you know, if you don't even get my, but just to do this work of like, what do I value today? And I think today all of us are valuing human relationship over things like a Rolex watch or like a fancy car more than anything in the world, right? Like, it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, we're all in the same boat together. And I think we all are coming home to this idea that we all value connection and human relationships. And even those who self-proclaim as introverts, which, you know, I would say I always say I'm a metavert, right? Introverts, extroverts, you know, we are all those things. We begin to realize that it doesn't matter, you know, where you feel like you live on the spectrum. We all need human interaction to be happy. And just sitting with that and finding gratitude and just that realization is just a beautiful first step. I think for me, this time during COVID, it was the first time I ever saw a leadership coach in 41 years. And I finally had the courage to face myself, to face my demons, face my past, you know, sort of my ancestral kind of passing downs, like what's been passed down for me from generation to generation in terms of just, you know, Indian patriarchal rage, you know, to Japanese stoic kind of avoidance. And I think, you know, I've been working on that, I think, in this body from all my life. So I feel like I'm moving through it. And also to face myself as a leader, to look at sort of where my blind spots are, to really connect to where I could be a better partner, leader, supporter, for my team, for my friends and beyond has been a very vulnerable, very tender experience. And, you know, and I think it's interesting, like, you know, when you build a community, you take this time to go in for yourself, that's one thing. But then when you go in for yourself to then be better to serve others, that's even another thing, right? So to go in to excavate all your things, to connect to who you are, the qualities that you want to embody in order to then radiate the authentic version of yourself, to then attract the humans that you really want, which is what I did from 30 years old. I felt like totally lonely and alone. I looked myself in the mirror on my 30th birthday and I was like, oh my God, I'm lonely. And I don't know who my people are. I don't even recognize myself anymore. To now at 42 and to feel such a depth of connection to my community, to have focused and prioritized friendships and belonging as like a must have, not a nice to have, that changed my life. Like I think we prioritize career, romantic love, family, and then friends. So I have so many friends who just let all their friendships go when they became parents and completely just became workaholics and parentaholics and forgot about their friends and only maybe saw their friends at their children's birthday parties or whatever. And they're so miserable. And until we begin to reprioritize hanging out with our friends and spending leisure time with people in our own sort of areas of interests and values, we are going to continue just feeling like unhappy, feeling lonely and isolated, even sleeping next to someone at home, you know, unless we begin to really balance out our lives in every way.
God. Super well said. And talking about this reprioritization, you also challenged Abraham Maslow in your book, and you showed a new pyramid of needs, the Agrawal version of the hierarchy of needs. And instead of self-actualization, you put joy on top of the pyramid. And I think it's really like as well aligning with joy with your family, joy in love and in your love life, but as well joy with your children. Like there are so many different roles, but joy is really how I like understand it, at your soul, at your heart, at the center of your actions.
That's right. I think self-actualization sort of feels still connected to this internal experience, whereas joy is such a sort of shared internal external sort of fully kind of expressed experience. And so I just wanted to, you know, and I think also when Abraham Maslow wrote his hierarchy of needs, it was 1943, you know, there was a lot of studies that hadn't been done at the time on belonging, loneliness, isolation. We hadn't really even understood the nuclear family until the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, you know, like people still lived very much generationally at the time. And so I think loneliness and isolation has become such a prevalent thing with social media, with internet, with computers, with, you know, sort of moving to bigger cities, everyone moving away from their family. So there's a lot that has happened since 1943 when Maslow wrote his hierarchy of needs. So to sort of still live in that paradigm really denies where we are today. and denies just all the advancements, beautiful advancements, but also the new needs that we want to really prioritize as we ascend to our greatest heights. And so that's really what I wanted to do, not to say what he said is not right, but to say that we've evolved since.
Yeah. And the joy that you're bringing out on the dance floors, let's go back to, I think it was in 2013, 2014, when you started Daybreaker. How did you come up with the idea? Tell us a little bit about the concept. And then let's also head to March 2020, like it was as well for us. We didn't do a tipping point. We were just in the States, different things happening. Take us on this roller coaster and as well how the journey is going on from there.
Yeah, so, you know, in 2013, just a different time in life, I feel like. You know, I was 35, 34, single, living in New York City, entrepreneur, building my underwear company with my sister and friend, thanks. And just going out nightlife, you know, even as we miss it now in 2020, we're like, God, I can't wait for nightlife, you know, to reopen again. But at the time, it just was, you know, becoming more and more toxic. It was very unsafe for women, for me to feel like I could fully let go on the dance floor without it feeling like an invitation to some drunk or drug, you know, induced dude to try to, you know, whatever, dance all over me. And all so many women I know felt the same way. So it was sort of a more toxic environment. Everyone's sort of zombies on these new designer drugs that are out. Just DJs pushing buttons, just a very kind of dark experience. While also exciting, like you're going out with your friends, you're dressing up, you feel hot, you feel fun, you're dancing, it's an exciting environment. So there's all this beauty of nightlife. There's all this like beautiful arts of nightlife, the music, the dance, the dressing up, the community, the connection, the letting your hair down, the just relaxing, all of that. But then when you mix it with the kind of the codependence, with I need to be drunk, I need to have drugs, I need to like, you know, be sort of like on substances to have a good time, that's when shit hit the fan, you know? And so it was all about like, how do we actually break that codependence between having fun, nightlife, dressing up, all the fun stuff, and the drugs and alcohol? And I was just like, what if we just, you know, broke them apart? And in order to do that, what if we did it in the morning? You know, when the sun, you know, came up, when your circadian rhythms, you know, were telling you to be most energized and were telling you to be most optimistic and social. So we launched Daybreaker as a social experiment, as an art project to really see, like, would people wake up at sunrise on a weekday morning before going to work and, you know, consume green juice instead of alcohol and dance their faces off sober? Like, can we train our brains to release our natural high without substances? And I call that your dose. And that was a eureka moment as I was kind of researching our happy neurochemicals in our brains. And I was like, oh my gosh, our four happy neurochemicals spells out the word dose. And dose is about drugs and dosing on whatever, you know, on X, Y, and Z. And anyway, and so, and by the way, like, I'm not like a sober person. Like, I definitely believe in sort of the medicinal side of the experience of, you know, kind of, psychedelics and all of that world. And I can speak, you know, volumes on that side of things when done in the right container, in a very safe environment, with the right people, with the right, you know, the right experience design, all of that. But just to do it recreationally, we're just popping pills to have a good time. Like, that's just cheap highs, cheap fun, like cheap, you know, cheap living, you know? And so if we can begin to cultivate our own natural dose, we can cultivate a way to create an experience. People can naturally release their happy hormones, their happy neurochemicals. That was the eureka moment. Like, what if we reverse engineered dance parties to actually help people release their natural quartet of neurochemicals? But it looks like a party and it looks like there's like aerialists and fire spinners and dundu puppets and all these cool things. And like, you know, all the things that you would see at a party, but we sprinkle in all of these ingredients and all this experience design around it so that by the time you leave, you've released your serotonin, you've released your dopamine, you've released oxytocin, you've released endorphins. And then you just leave and you're like, I've never felt more high in my life, you know? And you go to work and you're skipping and you're happy. And I think if every experience designer listening out there, every artist who wants to create an experience for others to enjoy, really thought through the lens of like our animal brains, because that's really what we are. We're these like, just these animals dressing up in outfits and like, you know, making, you know, beautiful art in the world. But like, we're very simple creatures at the end of the day. Right. And it's like, if we can just support each and every person to understand their neurochemical release or what makes them individually happy. And of course that's different for every single person. You know, that's actually, you know, the best way to design an experience. And, yeah. And so that's really what I'm teaching now is just like, you know, how to support other experienced designers and artists to not just think about selling tickets and like getting RSVPs or like creating art for the sake of creating art, which is beautiful and important. But what if you created art that also had a secondary sort of result of supporting humans in just firing different feelings and different sort of pew, 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 you know, like that to me is really exciting art, and uncharted art, you know?
Yeah. And I experienced it, two times vividly, but now also in the online experience. But Daybreaker, it took off in like around 30 cities around the globe. So also like interculturally, I think dance is a very important stimulus for this amazing joy. And I couldn't agree more to the fact that like you walk out of this experience and then like you have the full day to normally like after this feeling, you go to sleep, but then you have this full day of positive energy to bring to the world, to bring to your family, to your community. And I think that's so amazing.
And I think for me, you know, it was so wild. And I think for all of us, it was just like, wow, there are over 500,000 people now who are interested in waking up at sunrise in 30 cities around the world to experience life in a new way. So when we blew up and grew that fast and people began to like invite us into their countries and their cities and it would be end of life, that was when I was like, oh, wow, like this is a movement towards the light, you know? And then it's like to work with Dundu now, you know, around light art and then to come online when COVID happened, you know, and to then launch live stream experiences. And then to really, again, come back to the first question when we launched in 2013 of like, how do we design an experience in a 2D box environment? I can't just, you know, put a video on a club scene and just be like, okay, great, we're going to shoot this. And then hopefully people are going to feel the same feelings. We just don't experience the same feelings. And I think lots of people are doing that. They're just throwing a camera up and then expecting the same feeling. And people are just, you know, bored with it. Right. So I think what you've done so beautifully with Dundu and what we've done, I think very thoughtfully, is really think about how can we actually maximize and optimize the 2D environment to really create the most potent experience for people in an online virtual environment. So we spent months and months and months learning about all the technologies that exist on live stream, all the different ways in which we can create like affirmations wheels around the screen where we can throw me on top of your screen so we can be dancing together, but like the technology really exists that we can do that now. You know, where there's like ways to chat, break, you know, so many ways to hold up different signs, hold up photos, like what are the interactive elements that we can bring into the experience to really, you know, really maximize the 2D landscape. And I think, you know, we've succeeded in really refining it, but I think it continues to be a process, you know, and it's going to continue until we all become, you know, virtual, I don't know, like robots living in these VR machines, which hopefully never happens.
And on this journey towards like on this creative pivot towards the digital space, what were like the biggest aha moments? On the one hand side, the biggest aha moments are this is actually working online and in some parts maybe even better. But what are also some limits of technology? Because we are this simple animals in a way, we all have the same or similar biology. tell us a little bit about these learnings and as well, like it's an ongoing process. And I think like every day a new platform comes out and like new ideas pop up. But I think so far, like in this 10 months, you did a great job already.
Well, thank you. Well, we just launched our new membership, Dose, which is a membership platform where we practice joy. And I think that's where I was just like, okay, how do we help people practice joy every single day? And I think that's the real, for me, that's the ultimate sort of service, which is like, how do, you know, we do once a month parties online, which is really fun and really epic. But to really help people form new habits in this 2D environment, we have to be there with them every day, 24/7. And, you know, people talk about 21-day challenges. That's a great way to kickstart a new habit, but habits can need to be continuously watered, right? And so that's been, for me, the biggest kind of new focus is just how do we actually serve and support our community in practicing joy every single day? So, you know, you look at the yoga practice, you look at meditation practice, but there literally isn't a practice for joy. So that's really what we're doing now. So we launched Dose, which is a joy practice. And you want this to eventually become as ubiquitous as like you see joy studios, like these, the way you see yoga studios. Like I want you to go into a joy studio and you can basically like, you know, you can dance, you can do gratitude practice, you can do journaling, you can do tapping practices, you can do Qigong, you can do, you know, color sort of therapy. You can do all kinds of different things to practice joy. Scent therapy, you know, you can go and just like smell lavender and just like, just get your whole, again, we're animals. And so the 2D environment, the, you know, the difficulty is that you can't smell, you can't taste, you can't touch, but you can always touch yourself. And self-massage is something that we're launching on our platform to teach people how to, you know, as a joy practice, how to self-massage, how to invite oxytocin into your bodies. We're inviting people to just create scents in their homes to like really like invite more beautiful aromas into their spaces while they practice joy with us. We do gratitude journaling. We do all kinds of different things inside of the movement practices. And so that has been, I think, for me, the biggest new challenge for what we're, what I'm sort of thinking about every single day, which is how can we make the joy practice, the next big thing that the world at large practices, because yoga is not for everyone. You know, yoga, you can't, if you have bad knees or you have your elder or you're a young little kid, like there's, you know, there's limitations around it. I love yoga. I practice almost every day, but I also see lots of friends and family members who can't practice. Same thing with meditation, just sitting while I love meditation. Seated meditation is also not for everybody, but what can we create that is ubiquitous to humanity? And that is practicing joy, you know? And so I'm very much, and by the way, like yoga and meditation are both part of a joy practice. So we have very much both of the practices inside the joy experience, but I just am so focused on, you know, what is the rounded out experience for a daily joy practice? That the whole world, that humans, whether you're from India or Africa or Bhutan or China or Brazil or Stuttgart, you know, or New York City, can align on and practice and feel like that same sense of like, wow, I'm so connected. I feel so alive. I feel so in belonging. My body isn't like hurting. It's glistening. It's filled with energy. It's not sore from doing too many reps of something, you know? And I just feel so committed to that.
I can't wait to have a joy studio in Stuttgart and like going around the world and seeing these joy studios pop up. And I think that's really like another great vision. So I love this, these sparkling eyes. And talking about these great visions, You're an artist, you're a community architect, community builder, but as well an entrepreneur. How do you combine these two hats? You love hats as well, but how is it sometimes you're so like into just doing it, but at some point, maybe it's Eli, but like when are you putting on the business glass? Is this just something happening on the way because the idea is so great, because you founded several companies, because the podcast is about the bridge between arts and business. And so it's always interesting, how do you get this business side into the game?
So no, very much the business side is also me. Eli is more on the partnership side and is development. But no, I like being a female talking about business, because I think that's also a way for us to really educate and let other female artists and just entrepreneurs and wellness enthusiasts and entrepreneurs in general know that it's not just for men to do, but women to really to own as well. And yeah, I mean, my background is I was an investment banker out of college. I was in finance for years, and so I'm not afraid of numbers. And I think, you know, most people in the world of arts, there's, and I continue to find myself more like I will be like, I hate looking at spreadsheets, but like, as you begin to sort of imagine a life of art for yourself, it's so important to know what is the business around it. And I think so many artists don't know how to turn an art project into a profitable business and build a team that can lead you to that. And I think that's really one of the areas that I love supporting artists on, and just people in the wellness space too, because people, yoga teachers also are often, you know, very bad at making money, you know? So it's like, how do we actually teach them? So the first thing I always say is, are you the best person to be the face of the thing? Right. And so if you're doing Dundu, for example, I think you're a fantastic face for the thing. But what if you were shy and you were, you know, and you weren't, you know, you couldn't talk, like, is it you the best person to be the CEO? And I think so many people in the space of the arts, they don't know enough about sort of like organizational sort of like alignment. And so people don't always know their role. And I'm having trouble with this. I have trouble with this all the time with just people thinking that they should be in roles that that's not in their zone of genius. So just to really align on what your zone of genius is, and then finding the best people who aren't going to step on your toes, who don't do the same things that you do. So like, if you find a puppeteer, it's like, I love Dundu and I'm also a puppeteer, then they're stepping on your toes. Like, you want someone has business acumen, who's going to come in and teach you how to do it. So I just think that understanding, where that is in your org chart is so important. And for us, it's like Daybreaker makes money selling tickets, selling sponsorships, and now memberships. And we look and see, okay, great. In order to get to, if we want to hit this revenue benchmark, we need to get to 10,000 members. To get 10,000 members, we need to work backwards. We need to get at least 1,000 members each month on the platform. Well, how do we do that? Facebook advertising. You know, there's like digital advertising, affiliate partnerships, podcast, whatever, right? So it's like, you know, you go and you do the thing. And I think there's a fear around, especially with art, you're so close to it, and it's such a tender piece of yourself, that to sell it and to talk about it, it just feels like gross and embarrassing and hard. But if you can imagine yourself with like a, and that's what I do all the time. I just literally imagine it, put on like a space suit, you know, and I'm just like, Radha, you're not selling your art and your thing, but you're actually selling a practice that's going to help millions of people. And that it's not about you like getting someone to pay, but it's really you offering an affordable service for anybody to be able to come and do. And so like, how can I put that hat on? Not from a place of asking, but from a place of I'm serving you. So I think that's really what most artists forget to do. It's more like, hey, will you buy my painting, or will you like support my puppet, versus like, listen, I'm going to like, I'm going to make your team 10 times more productive by having Dundu there, because they're going to be so open creatively, and there's going to be such a mass opening for them in their channels, that you're going to have new sort of creative brainstorming with your team that you've never had before. Whatever, I'm making this up, but it's like, you know, so I just think that, you know, selling is really hard for artists, and then learning how to do that is from the place of service. Has been for me the most helpful, and then creating something that people want. Like, it's like the three questions I ask in business is like, what sucks in your world? Does it suck for a lot of people? So like, you know, with Daybreaker, what sucks in my world? Well, women don't like to go out at night clubbing because, you know, it's a very predatory environment. Everyone's fucked up. It's like annoying and whatever. So it's like not a positive environment. So does it suck for me? Yes. I love going out and dancing, but it sucks to go out. Does it suck for a lot of people? Yes. Everyone I talk to, it sucks for. So, and then the third question is, can I be passionate about this issue, cause, or community for at least 10 years? And because that's how long a business will take to launch. And if you're like just launching a t-shirt company, or if you're just launching a thing that like no one other than you is interested in, then it's not a business. It's just a passion project. And you just have to know the difference. So I think that's really, for me, the delineation between a passion project and a scalable business.
that helps a lot to also say, like, can you stick to it? And it's also like, is it this area of genius that you see yourself? And then as well, at some point, building a team around yourself that it's like mutually pushing each other towards like the next big thing, towards higher goals. Well, thanks for these business insights.
Last thing I want to say is, don't take money from people who are not 100% aligned with your vision. I've had multiple hostile takeovers. I've had co-founders drain my bank accounts. I've had, you name it, I've dealt with it. And I've launched and built, you know, five or six businesses in the last 20 years, and I've seen it all. And the biggest thing is, don't give away your art to an investor that is going to dangle millions of dollars in front of you, but takes away all of your control, takes away all of your, and so many artists I know will sign bad deals because they're excited about getting checks signed. But the end result is years of suffering for a net sort of negative gain. So it's better to know that up front and still be kind of sort of a struggling artist than sign a bad deal and have years of misery. So I've learned that lesson very much the hard way. And fortunately I sold one of my companies last year, and it was a really exciting experience. So you have great moments and you have moments of deep pain and struggle. But the most important thing is having the courage to start in the first place and pick yourself back up and keep doing it again and keep doing it again and keep doing it again, and never lose sight of who you are in the process.
Yeah, sometimes really as well, the art of letting go of some things to refocus. I think that's also important, because sometimes with all these crazy ideas popping up, what's like the major focus areas and what are just some fun side passion project in order to really go steep and go all in on sounds. Because I think like with just 20% here, 20% there, you won't be fully engaged, and you're also hard to attract the people that say, okay, let's go Rada, let's go Fabian to launch that. I'm really impressed, especially about the Daybreaker community. And do you have also some secrets? How do you build communities? How do you make them grow? How do you create in a way as well, like an own dynamic? For example, Sean, he's preparing great audio mixes, and he's asking people, hey, send me your favorite songs. And so like, how do you create this own dynamic in the system that you kind of like, you give a starting impulse, you hold the frame, but from there on, the magic is happening. Some secrets.
Yeah. I mean, I just think, you know, the first thing you do is you create an experience that people want to be a part of. And it's like, it's just like focused, thoughtful, intentional experience design. And if you do that and you have your first 200 adopters, but those 200 adopters are handpicked. So it's like, for example, with with Daybreaker, when we first launched in 2013, I wrote down on an Excel spreadsheet 300 names of people that I knew, that friends knew, you know, here and there, that I was like, oh, they're going to be positive and excited about this. They're going to, if you create a centrifuge, like just a starting point with 300 names of people that aren't going to be like, that's a stupid idea. Like, or like, you know, that aren't going to be like, I'm not going. And then they're going to spread bad juju to other people. If you're going to, like, I call it FYFs, fuck yeah friends, in my book, you know? So like write down a list of 300 people who are like, sure, I'd wake up at 6 a.m. to go dancing on a weekday sober. Like, I'll totally try that one time. Why not? You know? So I wrote that down, and 180 of those 300 people showed up. And that intentionality in the energetic mix of who was the first adopters, who were the first people to bring that energy. So that first one was so lit, so beautiful, because it was so curated and thoughtful. The second one, when 300 people came, the 180 came again because they had such a good time. But now the 150 that came and made it 300, they're now experiencing the glow and the halo of this beautiful energy that was created from the very beginning. And then you grow the movement from this centrifuge of energy, you know? So if you just like, how many tickets can I sell? And like, I'm having an event and anybody come, please. It's like, you're never going to build a movement that way. But if you really pay attention to this core community and you grow from there, that core will be the backbone of the movement.
Yeah. And I think especially in the digital space, curation is so important, but as well, I experienced as well as a sort of ritual. And how would you say, like, the rituals that work in the analog world, how can you create these rituals, these kind of like bonding experience, these merge when you really feel connected despite it's just a screen and a camera? How do you see the importance of rituals, and what's the difference between rituals online and offline?
Totally. So rituals are the backbone of lasting communities. So you can start a community, right? You can kickstart a community by doing these types of sort of practices. But unless you have ritual built into your community won't last over time. The reason why the church is so popular and huge and big is because they have the Bible, and you sit in pews, and there's sermons, and there's, you know, all the things, right? And why football, you know, watching football, because you wear jerseys and everyone wears the thing. And like you go to the stadium and everyone chants and the, you know, the wave and all of that, right? The rituals around that. So for us, it was like, okay, how do we create a ritual in a club environment? So that was one piece of it. So we had a hugging committee welcome you with a hug at the door. We had, you know, the ritual of reading intention cards at the end. We had all these different moments inside the dance experience where we had what we call wow moments every 15 minutes from an aerialist, a puppeteer, a fire spinner, you know, dueling saxophonist, whatever, for the live experience. And that ritual, people knowing that there was going to be all of these things happening throughout the experience, but didn't know what it was or when it was going to happen or what the theme was or what, you know, where the venue was. So you keep the mystery, right? So it's like ritual with mystery, right, is actually where all of the juice lies. You know, if it's just the same thing over and over again, eventually the church dies because nobody wants to keep going back to the same thing over and over again. But if it's ritual, so you can count on things happening every time, combined with mystery, right? So mystery and ritual safety, mystery and safety, that's the soup for a lasting community and movement building. So ritual, a Daybreaker online, we have so many moments like we always open with a movement practice to get you warmed up. With a dose class, which, you know, sometimes I lead, or a yoga practice or a dance class, or just to get the cobwebs out. You know, we open with a beautiful, just an intention around, yeah, that warm up, followed by a dance party. But inside the dance party, we have like, show us where you're from, write a piece of paper where you're from, you know, show us a photo of someone that you're missing. Let's have all these wonderful dance moments, where we do, everybody leading the community and having their moment to shine. So like there's all these wonderful collective rituals built into the experience that make the sort of coming back so beautiful. But then the mystery of like, oh, what's the theme going to be this time? Who's the DJ? What are the wow moments? What's the intention ceremony going to be like? What's the, you know, all the elements are different, but the rituals are the same. So that combination is actually the key, you know?
Yeah, it looks like in front of my imaginary eye, there's this cocktail of mystery and ritual and like the right dose in a way.
Yeah, that's
that,
right.
That then right. Again, like is creating all of the magic.
That's right, exactly.
But Radha, you really took us on a journey of how to spread joy, how to build community with an artistic view, but as well the business glasses in point. And you also shared a bit of the visions down the road. Well, last but not least, you already shared a bit like how you have to observe the world to come up with these great ideas. But is there also something, how do you take immediate action on these ideas? How do you get new ideas, but also how to start realizing them? Do you have some creativity hacks for that as well?
So I think the first thing, I think most people need things to be perfect to launch, women especially. And I think, you know, my mantra is iteration is perfection, right? Iteration meaning just make it incrementally better, right? So 10% better, 10% better, 10% better. And I think we get paralyzed by the fear of launching or the fear of starting. So most people leave things on paper forever until things are perfect. And I take a very masculine approach, which is like, let's just launch this thing and then we will make it better and we'll learn and we're going to make, you know, and then we're going to get so many more, you know, beta testers, experience of it, and that will strengthen it and so on and so forth. So I think that's, you know, men, and this is a very interesting stat, men are more likely to launch things when it's just an idea on a napkin. Men are also more likely to be hired when it's an idea on a napkin, whereas women have to show proof of their experience and proof of like all these different wins that they've had in the past. And women all themselves feel like they need to be perfect to launch things. And so there's just a very divergent way in which women and men do business in general. And I just think that it's so important for women to begin realizing that if we just started, and I'm so not afraid of just starting and seeing, and like if I fall flat on my face, I fall on my face a million times, still got a face, you know, like I'll get up and do it again and have fun in the process. And so I think step one is just recognizing when you're being a perfectionist and when you just want to launch something, what is holding you back in terms of what you are not good at, and then to go out and seek support and not be afraid to share your idea. Like the number of young first-time entrepreneurs who tell me like, I can't tell you my idea, but it's long. And I'm like, no one is going to steal your idea. So just share it with the world. And you never know, someone's going to be like, oh, I'm good at this. And I'm good at that. And I'm good at this. And people begin to help you because you courageously put it out there. And I think that's, so no one's going to steal your idea. There's a million ideas in the world. Ideas are cheap. So, you know, an idea is only as good as execution. And two, launch and make it better incrementally. Like that's, and then, you know, if you can just let that be your mantra, it just gets really fun. It just gets so fun and so easy. And if you continue to see things as an experiment, and I always say Daybreaker is a constant experiment. We're not like, you know, like, this isn't it. It's like, we're constantly experimenting and some experiments fail and some experiments succeed. Like if we begin to, if we continue to have that as our mindset, then it'll constantly also be fun and curiosity inducing.
Oh, magically, the magic of iterations. Thanks so much for sharing this. Well, startup spirit, and especially also encouraging all the women out there to start now, start simple. Don't look always for the perfection, but really start. And also, yeah, you're right. An idea is cheap in a way, because if you don't execute, it will just like die on the graveyard of all of these ideas. And that's the worst thing that could happen to an idea. So open up and share it. Well, thanks a lot for sharing your wisdom so openly with us. Well, last but not least, is there any like last words of wisdom, last words of motivation, especially for these times, that you would like to share with our artists, with our community builders, with all our these dynamos out there to keep on shining and rolling?
Yeah, I think that the biggest piece of wisdom I can share is, especially for artists who are, you know, just sort of often just sitting in a chair all day, is you can't really move creativity unless you're moving your body. And so to really remember that your body is your brain, and to practice joy, not just through your mind, but through brain body modalities and practices. And whether that's just doing a one song dance party every hour in your space, whether it's just getting up and just doing a sunrise halo, or just, you know, just figuring out ways to invite body science into your everyday joy practice. That's really the ticket to joy and happiness and creativity.
I'll buy the ticket of happiness and joy. Yeah, let's get up, move our body, and build this connection, mind, body, and our soul. Keep it shining. Well, thanks so much, Radha, for being on the Sea Art podcast. And we're looking forward to dance on, and hopefully very soon as well in the real world. Until then, via Zoom, big high five.
Big high five.
I feel so inspired now. So many interesting thoughts about how to start something, how to not try to be perfect, but really iterate, but as well, like the importance of joy, like this inner state of creativity, but also connectedness with the rest of us. Please, share this episode and follow us on Instagram @SeaArtsNow, and let's soon meet at a daybreaker and dance it out loud.